You're listening to Wet Shaving Talk, powered by Sharpologist.com, where we're dedicated to preserving the art and skill of classic shaving. I'm your host, Joe Burley. Today is June 7th, 2021. All right, everyone, welcome back to the podcast on this exciting edition of Wet Shaving Talk. Today on the show, we're going to talk about the Rubber Set article release. That's the article that I wrote regarding the Rubber Set 400, one of the most difficult articles I've ever written, one of the most hardest to find any information and research on. There's nothing on this company. There's nothing saved from the archives from the original company. And it just took a lot of time to actually work on. So I hope you guys enjoyed it. If you haven't read it yet, I left a note, little show notes, but we'll talk a little bit about that. I left the link in the show notes. Sorry. Next, what is the HHT and why is it important with wet shaving or with straight razor shaving when you're honing a razor? All right, and wet shaving versus other hobbies. Something I like to talk about at least once a year. Wet shaving versus other hobbies. Does it create new hobbies? What does it do? Is it a hobby itself or is it just a way of life? And Collector's Corner, we're going to talk about Wolf Whiskers. We've talked about them briefly. I've got some new information coming out about Wolf Whiskers soon. And just a really good company that I believe has been around for a few years now. And it's more of a modern collectible in itself. So we'll talk about them as well. And there'll be more content for Wolf Whiskers in the future, as well, in the very near future. So guys, without further ado, let's get on with the show. Alright guys, the Rubber Set 400 article release just came out. This article was, I'm going to be honest with you, it was a big pain to do. The most research I've ever done, I went through so many different areas to try to find just something on the Rubber Set 400. You know, one of my favorite brushes, I've owned a couple of them in the years. I've had a couple of homages as well, and I actually really do enjoy the design of the actual brush itself. It's just, wow, it is just so hard to find any information. There's nothing on this brush, believe it or not. And that's because the company has switched over so many times. But looking at its 70th anniversary since the patent came out, so it's been 70 years, almost to the date, I believe, it's since the patent, which I believe the patent was actually, it was dated May 6th. So I started writing this article back in April. And it debuted just a few, I think last week. So it was, about, we're right there on the actual 70th anniversary, almost to the date. So May 6th, and what year was it again? I'm sorry. May 6th, 1941 was the actual year that the patent came out. So it probably was around a little bit before that. And just going through it, if you guys get a chance to read the article, you know, Rubber Set was really, it was one of those companies that was making paintbrushes. And they really, it was just because they had to make paintbrushes for their business. It wasn't really that they wanted to and no one else would do it. They didn't make, you know, so much money off it or whatever that you would think. And really what Rubber Set did with this particular, and not so much with this particular brush, but in general, is they were one of the first real American companies to utilize a lot of advertising. So they actually, when the brushes first came out, when this company was really starting to become successful, I'm just going to real briefly summarize it with you, is that they started investing about $100,000 a year, which is equivalent to $2.8 million in advertising if you use today's dollars, just to get the shaving brush aspect of the business out. And they started to really they looked at it and they said, okay, we're going to continue to do this for five or six years. And they ended up really starting one of the most successful brush companies of all time. Now, what was their claim to fame? It was really just setting the knots in rubber. It kept them strong. A lot of the bristles were, you know, would fall apart in the older brushes and they wouldn't hold. But by setting it rubber, they really sat there and it was waterproof, all that good stuff. Used it for paintbrushes and other brushes as well. And it worked, right? So a lot of other companies would see that the patent, they started to copy the design, actually start doing that as well. So soon after they started doing shave brushes, they saw the success. They saw a lot of people getting into it and different designs and all that good stuff. They started making toothbrushes with the same design of the actual modern design we see. So the toothbrush that we have today, the one that you hold with a handle, is all from the Rubber Set company. So they're like the Gillette of the toothbrush world, right? They started mass producing toothbrushes in the modern design, and that's why we have them today. So if you would look at like Gillette with the double edge razor when they started with the double ring back in 1903, how they just set the tone for years to come, I would say that you can Rubber Set did the same thing for the toothbrush company, more so than the actual shaving brush world, right? But they also, I mean, they've made a lot of brushes. They made a lot of shave brushes, a lot of different designs. And they were in business for quite a while. So up until the mid-1950s, hard to find out when they stopped making brushes. But they were switched over a few times and ended up with, I believe, Sherwin-Williams at one point, who then switched over. I mean, it's just right now today, the company's still technically around, but they're no longer any affiliation to the old Rubber Set company. Now, when I was doing some research for it, very difficult to find anything. Really, I found a couple of articles, which I linked up in the article itself with an interview of Mr. Albright, which is the owner of and CEO, I believe, of Rubber Set at the time. Yeah, I'm sorry, he was the CEO. I know I got to make sure I was right on that. I'm just having a little bit of a brain fart, I guess, if you think, to say. But yes, he was one of the real, I guess, another entrepreneur of this time, really starting with as like a kind of like a hairbrush company, and then going to the paintbrush company, and then starting to make shaving brushes and then toothbrushes after that. So they were very. I mean, the story is great if you get to read the article and looking at it. And then when his son took over, that's when really Albright Jr. took over. That's when they started getting the shave brushes and getting away from the other stuff. That's when they also got into the toothbrushes too. So it was about the company started when they started doing that kind of stuff. And yeah, it was actually a really big part of today's toothbrush design. So I never knew that until I read this article and this regarding an interview way back, several decades ago. So taking a look at it, just looking through this, scrolling through it. I'm just looking at it right now and I'm just like in awe about how hard it was. I can't even believe I found that. So I linked it up to where you guys can find it on Google and look through it. And let me know your thoughts too. If you see anything, send me an email or whatever, if you thought it was pretty cool or not. But it really is interesting to find some unknown or unbeforeseen information about the Rubber Set company in general and the Rubber Set 400. Unfortunately, the Rubber Set 400 is still a big mystery. A lot of people don't know about it and don't know where the design came from, other than some of the patents and some of the little bit of information out there. They didn't keep too much in the archives department then. So what you see is what you get now. That's the unfortunate truth. But at least we have a brush the design is awesome. I've been using it for a long time. I know a lot of guys have. And it's been replicated dozens of times in the wet shaving world. So obviously, there's a demand for it. And it's really cool. So if you get a chance, guys, check it out. I put the link in the show notes for you to read that article. All right, here's a controversial part of wet shaving, or if you're at least in straight razor shaving. What is the hanging hair test, aka HHT? So the hanging hair test is one of those common tests that when you're shaving or actually honing a razor, you wanted to see if it's considered shave ready, you wanted to pass the actual HHT test, or the hanging hair test. It's met with a lot of controversy, and I'll tell you why why I think you should and should not really take it to heart. Really, guys, when you're using a razor and honing a straight razor, it's the shave test is number one. If it's comfortable for you, chances are it's going to be comfortable for somebody else. Now, if you're a professional honer, such as, the Lynn Abrams out there in the world, you're not going to really, you can't really go by the shave test on every single razor, because you can't really shave with every single if you're doing thousands a year. So you would have to go by certain tests. And I know that they do an arm hair test, which is see if it cleans up, if it's taking arm hair off your arm cleanly without it touching the skin. That's the first test, and you can move on to the next progression of honing. But the HHT is one of the biggest ones. Now, personally, I use the HHT on every single razor I hone, and it goes by the way that it snaps off the hair. That's how I do it. A lot of people will say, oh, that's nothing. You shouldn't do it like that. If I touch the hair on it and it pops off cleanly without having to give it more pressure, then I think the razor is just about ready for the final progression of honing. And then usually after that, it'll cut it cleanly. Now, if it's a hollow ground razor, it'll make a little ping when you do it. Bing, bing, bing. That's really that you're getting close to getting it sharpened, if it's 100%, almost honed. If you're using something like a quarter hollow or a full wedge, you may not hear that noise as much, but it'll cut them cleanly. You want it just to touch it. When you touch the hair, you want it just to pop the hair in pieces. And you want to be able to, the smaller little piece of hair you can do, the better, right? A little bit of a less than an inch, you know, quarter of an inch, eighth of an inch. If you can do that and just keep cutting it, it's good. Now, a couple things I do want to mention. Everybody's hair is different. So you might have a thick hair that is, you know, easier to cut, and a thinner hair that may not ever pass the HHT. So that's why it's a little, the controversy here. So the main thing is use a consistent hair that you've always been using. Could be your own, could be, you know, from, you know, somebody's hairbrush or something that you have. It could be synthetic hair that you have. It could be anything that you do. And utilizing it that way and looking at it and just having a consistent, you know, approach to this part of the honing process and to checking to see if the razor is sharp. You want to make sure that the whole razor passes the test from the heel to the toe. And the reason being is you want to make sure every part of that blade is cutting properly, because sometimes you can hone a little bit too much of a smile into the razor, which is in the middle and not on the ends. And then you want to make sure that, of course, you always check it with a shave test. Always shave. If it's comfortable for you, then it works. I've had razors that passed the HHT that didn't shave as cleanly as I wanted them to, brought them back to the hones again, and then it came back really nice. I've also had razors that, wedge razors that didn't pass it that well, that shaved beautifully. I don't know if that's truth for everybody, but that's just what happened to me in my limited experience with honing. I mean, I'm not up to thousands of razors. I've probably honed maybe 100 of them, maybe in my life, if that much, maybe less. So I'm not a professional, to say the least, but that's my experience with that. And really just to whatever works for you. So if anybody says you have to or don't have to, really my thoughts on that is it's all up to the user. Your mileage may vary, and it depends on what you want to do when you're actually sharpening your straight razor. So don't take it to heart, but also it does work. You know, so there are a couple guys out there that do swear by this. I know Jared from the Superior Shave, he does use the HHT on every single one of his razors, and his razors are great. He uses synthetic hones. He uses mostly natural hones when he uses cauticles a lot. You know, I also know of a couple of honers that don't use it at all. They don't use it. They might use it just to see if they're getting close, and then they do the shave test. Or some people use a tomato test, where if it cuts the skin of tomatoes cleanly without like pressing on it, just like rips the skin. Then that's a way they test their razor, and they know that the bevel is set and all that. So really, it all depends on your taste and what you do. There is no right or wrong answer here, but I do know one thing, that is if your razor does pass it like very well, and it's just, you know, breaking hairs and little pieces like that really quick, chances are you're in the right direction. So you're honing it correctly and you're getting there. If not, you're pretty darn close. Wet shaving versus other hobbies. So this happens about once a year. I talk about this. I like to bring this up. You know, does wet shaving open the door for other hobbies? It's a discussion we've had many times in the wet shaving world. You'll see it on all the forums, and that's why they have sub forums, and they'll have like pen forums, watch forums and stuff. And my thoughts on how wet shaving can really change your life. Well, when I started wet shaving, you know, 10 years ago, I started just, you know, opening the door, trying to wet shave and learn the process. And then I was really into starting to collect here and there. You know, at the time, you know, you guys know my story. I was in school. I didn't really have, you know, too much of a disposable income at the time. But I did have some, and I would buy, you know, stuff that I could or borrow something or whatever I can. Most of the stuff I bought was under $20 and just messing around with it. But it also lets you open up for other vintage hobbies, such as, like, I could tell you, I started to use natural brushes for when I did shoe shining. You know, I like to have my shoes clean and looking good, and wet shaving just opened the door of that. I started looking at, you know, shoe kits and stuff like that. I bought myself a set of brushes, and to this day, I still polish my shoes every week. All my shoes that I wear, you know, I do wear several different pairs of shoes to work, different colors and all that. And I like to keep them clean. So usually I will, put some shoe polish on them and brush them out and do them the old fashioned way here and there. Another hobby I brought up was fountain pens. You know, a lot of people, if you guys ever listen to Rick's old podcast, the Brush Soap and Blade podcast, you know, he was into all this stuff too. And that's really what got me into it a little bit, was listening to him. And he was like, yeah, I like the shoe shine. I like to do this and that. I do a lot of stuff with fountain pens. I do a lot of stuff with, you know, he had like a whole segment on like high quality gas cans for when he was using for gasoline. I mean, the guy really had a lot going for him when it came to quality products and the old fashioned way of doing things. He was into mechanical watches as well. So a lot of that just really started to get me into it. And while I may not collect a lot of those things, I still like to hold or own one or two really fine pieces just because it's quality and it just makes me feel like I've put more effort into it than not. And that's really where it comes to wet shaving as a hobby and a whole to me, in my opinion, and what makes that different from other forms of shaving and other forms, you know, just in general. It's just, it takes a little bit more effort, does take a skill, and it's a high quality product that you have that's way better than anything you can buy on the drugstore shelf. So looking at that, you know, it's just the extra effort to look better, to do better in your day. And whenever I wet shave before I go to work, I always, you know, feel like I start my day off right. It's kind of like waking up early and reading a book before you go to work. You know, wet shaving correctly is like you took that a little bit of extra effort to do it and to shave nicely and to make it look, give yourself that little bit more of an edge, right? I love to wear mechanical watches myself. I wear one every single day, and I'm not into smartwatches. You know, my friends have them. My wife has one. You know, I just like to have that old mechanical watch. Currently, I'm having one of my vintage watches actually restored. It was my grandfather's watch, and I have it actually being overhauled as we speak. Hopefully, it'll be ready soon. And I'm also looking to get another really, really nice watch to have every day. But that's just something that, you know, you look at, and every time you look at your wrist, you can look at it, you can look at the struggles in life and look at, hey, this is what I did to get to that point or how hard I had to work to get it. And just to have that little edge instead of, you know, a smartwatch. It's nothing against smartwatches, nothing against quartz watches or anything like that. It's just my personal preference. And, you know, I think a couple of us do as well. And also when you get to work writing with like a nice pen or something like that, fountain pens are great. I actually like to write with a Fisher space pen. I use that AG7, which is something I've been using for about, I'd say, 5 years now. First off, if you ever want a Fisher space pen, I know they're a little bit pricey, but they have a lifetime warranty, and I've broken the pen twice. One on my account, one was actually both of them because I dropped them, and I sent them back, and they sent them back completely fixed, you know, 100%. Fully fixed. You send it to them, they'll take care of it. They even send you some cartridges back too. So really good customer service there. Yeah, that's just something else. You know, if I'm going to write, I'd like to write with a good pen instead of buying other pens. Again, nothing wrong if you don't. It's just, that's me, and that's what wet shaving led to me. I never was into that stuff until I started wet shaving, and I got into those, you know, three other hobbies or three other ways of life afterwards, just because, you know, of the wet shaving way of starting things. That's kind of the way I went. So that's my thoughts on that, and I hope, you know, if you guys have any other similar stories or different story that you'd like to share, always feel free to tell me, because, you know, wet shaving really is, it's a lot of fun to me. You know, I do enjoy it. All right, and moving along, Wolf Whiskers. Now, I've featured them a few times in the podcast, and I'm a big fan. The picture in the show notes is my personal collection of the Wolf Whiskers I own now. You know, the one on to the left is a pinkish white one. That's one of his first brushes. I think that's from 2015, 2016. It's a very old Wolf Whiskers. All the way down to the left, my newest one, which is a 2020 model. And that was one that, you know, obviously you can see I've been getting a little bit more inventive with my designs. And I like the translucent bottoms. But I've always been a fan. And just the way Peter does business is great. So I actually did some work on this. And we'll have some more content coming out on Wolf Whiskers in the near future. You know, just giving them the salute and having them really get the time and the limelight that they deserve. Because Wolf Whiskers is a great product, guys. It's a handmade product, custom product. And where can you get a custom product like that, you know, to where somebody will make it to order for the price that you can get? So, I mean, I think I'm a big fan, obviously. I'm going to, you know, I'm shilling a little bit. I don't care. But, yeah, I've been a fan of Wolf Whiskers for a long time. So why are they cool? Because they're custom. They're the way you want to build them. And, you know, I think they deserve their own place in wet shaving history. Collecting Wolf Whiskers is fun. You can buy them. They're very readily available. Peter does. Although he slowed down production, there's several, probably a few thousand of them out there right now. The most valuable ones are the inside-out brushes. You know, those are the ones where the design's on the inside of the brush. Not too many of those out there. And really, getting on the wait list, you know, from a few years ago, there's this huge craze on Wolf Whiskers. They were going for like $500 to $1,000 sometimes for a brush on the forums and stuff. It's since slowed down a little bit. But Yeah, I mean, it's just really fun to collect. They're cool. And again, if you haven't dealt with Peter, if you have dealt with Peter, you should know. Great guy. So, I mean, I'm a fan. I can't help it. Good brushes, good people. What better to start your day than with a good brush, right? All right, guys. And that actually concludes the podcast for this week. Remember, our show is powered by Sharpologist.com. What your father didn't teach you about shaving. Special thanks to Mark, a.k.a. Mantic59. And guys, most of all you, the listeners. Don't forget to check out some of my work. The blog site's back up. I'm working on it right now. I actually had a couple posts with it, so you'll be seeing some posts on the blog site soon. More regularly, excuse me. And always feel free to email me at joe.whatshavingnews@gmail.com. Until next time, guys, 7/21/21. Shave straight and shave safe. Bye-bye now.